Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Much as we did 4 years ago, we've looked at elections viewing from perspectives ranging from allegations of interference from foreign nations or violations of campaign laws to the effect divisions are having on a democracy, all important topics, but those are relegated to another night. Last week, we began a discussion on these very elections and the ramifications resulting from the outcome of the federal elections. And while all eyes have been on who will be the 47th president of the United States, we have myriad federal, state, and local races of interest, some clearly decided, some that may not have been certified, and voting systems that might and unnecessarily do delay the outcome of these elections because they delay the counting of the votes. Tonight, we continue our status check that we began last week. As always, we're eager to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions, but not tonight. Due to technical difficulties, we will not be able to be taking your phone calls tonight. We won't, for this 1 week, be able to answer your calls, take your calls and answer your questions. But to help us sort all this out, we once again have guests that are returning that are going to prove phenomenal to continue this discussion, and it is a truly exceptional pairing of guests. Jocelyn Manalo made history as the first Filipina woman to be elected to the Daly City City Council in 2016, and last week she was re-elected for the third time. Mayor Manalo is currently the Senior Community Engagement Specialist Impact Policy and Communication with the City of San Francisco's Office of Economic Workplace Development. Beginning her journey as a community service worker, advocating for Filipino World War II veterans, I could go on and on, but she is an amazing guest with some great insights. Let me welcome Mayor Jocelyn Manalo.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for having me this evening.
You're always a pleasure when you come, and I really appreciate you joining us again tonight. And also joining us is a community activist, Brent Turner. Brent Turner is a civil rights activist specializing in elections, a pioneering advocate for open source election systems, and regarded as a catalyst for the recently deployed open source systems in New Hampshire and Mississippi. Brent is featured in the award-winning documentary, The Real Activist, with former CIA Director James Woolsey. And Brent, welcome to you for tonight's broadcast.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Mayor Manalo.
And I'd like to throw this open to both of you. We spoke last week almost exclusively about the implications of another Trump presidency. And believe me, the news over the last few days of the cabinet that he's assembling is plenty for us to talk about tonight. But I also wanted to turn our attention a little bit to what's happening locally. In last week's election, we voted out two incumbents in the East Bay based on recall. That would be the mayor of Oakland and the Alameda County District Attorney, both primarily on law and order issues. At the same time, voters are voting in a proposition that is designed to be harsher on drugs, on theft, because they want to deal with that three-pronged trident of theft, of drugs, and not rock and roll, but homelessness. I wanted to get your take on that. Do you think that locally things have been changing? Do you think that the pulse of what voters are saying is changing here in the Bay Area, like it is the rest of the state and country?
Mayor Manalo?
Well, I think, you know, the voters are really looking at, if I can share with all of you, you know, here in Daly City, you know, I'm so grateful to get reelected, and in a three-person race, got over 51%, and really, the priorities I had here in our community was around public safety, affordable housing, and really ensuring that our youth and senior services are at top of mind. And, you know, we have seen that here in Daly City, you know, there is really a sentiment of the voters that they've seen the work that we're doing. You know, we actually were the first city in the nation to, following the county, to deem loneliness as a public health crisis. And so we've really ramped up on really engaging community members and really bringing people together, you know, with multiple events and really bridging intergenerationally our seniors and young people. And we've seen also in our communities how we've been able to use technology in regards to public safety with automatic license plate readers. And, you know, just recently there was our first homicide in October, and, you know, our first one and one too many. But we've seen that the technology that we've approved to support our public safety officers has really been instrumental, because within 18 hours, they were able to get the suspects. And so, you know, when you're talking about, like, what is the communities wanting, and, you know, it's going to be on a very local level, always to be able to feel safe, to be able to have a better quality of life. And so here in our communities, we've seen that, you know, the voters have responded and have seen the work we've done here in our town, our city, Daly City. So.
And that really stands out, what you just said, in strong juxtaposition of Oakland, by way of example, where the mayor was unseated by a recall. But one of the things that she took pride in wasn't that there was a downtick in violence, but more focused than that, you commented that Daly City has seen the first homicide in quite some time. And I agree with you, that's one too many, but I appreciate you saying that. In Oakland, it was a point of pride that they went a week without a homicide, which to me is quite a statement for a city to say, we actually made it a week without a homicide. We take pride in that. That to me kind of supports what you were saying about people needing to feel safe.
Yeah, and that's what we're always continuing to thrive on. And really, you know, we're a welcoming city in Daly City, extremely diverse in our community here. And so, you know, community engagement is top of mind. And we've seen and heard from our community members that they do feel safe in Daly City. And that's something that we would want, you know, our community members to feel, you know, walking down the street or being able to go to their grocery store or whatnot. And so we're really building that here continuously, both with our, you know, public safety officers and our firefighters. You know, we had passed, you know, a sales tax increase in 2020. I know we're talking about 2020 for elections, but it was really a foresight in advance because we knew how important it was to invest in our public safety emergency. And so we did that in 2020, and we've seen that it has shown results in our increase in revenue and is helping ensure that we have, you know, our staffing that is adequate and really being able to get the technology to keep our community safe.
And that stands in contrast with one of your neighboring communities, which is rare for this part of the state, actually voted down a small tax increase solely to fund law enforcement.
Broadmoor.
It was. I wasn't going to mention it specifically, but yes, exactly. They voted down Measure T, fairly soundly, as I recall. It's all about people feeling safe. And well, let me turn it to you a minute, Brent. Do the election results overall were including throwing out Pamela Price on a recall, voting out George Gascon by voting in favor of a new district attorney elect, voting in Proposition 36, which, as I see it, is designed to tap into voter anger, but doesn't really offer solutions to solve the problems or funding for those things that they offer. But taken as a whole, do these election results mean there's a shift back towards the more tough on crime politics of the 80s, 70s, and 80s, and into the 90s? Or is it a broader swipe by the pendulum swinging back? How do you see it?
Well, I think there's a national issue that maybe affects us a bit, but luckily here in the Bay Area, not as much as in other territories, jurisdictions. And that is the rise of white supremacy factions that would drive the results to the right. That being said, as you know, I take great exception to the information and the disinformation involved in the conversation, because we become reliant upon exit polling, and we also become reliant upon audits, and we become reliant upon media and social and mainstream, and we become reliant upon technology that is not commensurate with best practices, in that we are still utilizing proprietary software voting systems. Now, does that mean that all the results are jumbled and incorrect? Obviously not. The Trump election deserves special attention, obviously, as they all do, but not to say there's manipulation occurring across the board, but certainly when you have election systems that are not up to standard as far as best practices, you have an issue. And I have an issue in just taking the results as gospel. So that's my feeling for the question, whether the country is listing toward the right. It's possible. There's a lack of education going on within the country, which is unfortunate. And as we know, the Russian propaganda machine has been hard at work, with more reports coming out today in Politico from the intelligence folks that Russia was sending mass disinformation throughout the systems, as we expected, but we hadn't had an official report until today.
Well, we knew that, and they were clearly the largest foreign adversary to be tapping into that, but others, China and Iran, were very much doing the same for the other side, not to the same volume. And one of the things that struck me about this past election, and I want to let both of you comment on this, wouldn't have the same effect locally, but on a large national election, the Democrats were approaching this from a very conventional election. They were going to the usual places, sending people to make appearances, buying time on conventional television. And it seems that the Trump campaign was tapping into social media, sending out short bits of information, doing far less in conventional places. And you're going to hit both the young voters who never really developed an appetite for newspapers and television, and the disenfranchised who don't trust it and want to go to social media, in a way that I think was reflected in the polls. Have either of you seen that?
Well, to carry on, Jeff, the polls are dubious at best. So, the chain of custody throughout this series of information is the issue. And then when you have people like Elon Musk speaking to Putin at the same time as Trump, you have, obvious cause for concern. So this is the age we're living in now. It's unfortunate. It was predictable, but albeit unfortunate.
Well, you touch on a point, and I think that when I've spoken to just some folks around, you know, who, you know, how they've organized and what they're, how they've organized, and I just ask, you know, clearly, you know, across the line, like, how do you get your information, right? And then also, what mediums do they use? And I think you're right. Social media has been really the way people have received information, that how they receive news. And so, you know, really being able to tap into that. And I think, you know, just through some just my own personal analysis is that, you know, when you do have, you know, someone in front of you, whether it's a phone, and it's usually going to be your phone, if you're able to get them, you know, through social media or on that platform, you're literally in front of them in that moment, right? Like, you're like tapping into their psyche. And so, I don't know, you know, like, I've seen some of the videos that have been put out there where they have utilized artificial intelligence to change some of the words, you know, that, you know, come out of some of the leaders, and it's not necessarily, you know, they're using artificial intelligence or AI to mimic and do these things. And so, you know, there is even that factor, right? When they're utilizing like liked images, right? And things like that, to convey a message. And so I do believe it has changed around, you know, organizing and what has been used in the past. I mean, we were in a pandemic in 2020, and you could not literally, like, you know, conventionally knock on doors. And then we went back to here in 2024, where conventionally knocking on doors and meeting people, you know, at their homes, right? And if we look at it, like, how many were knocked on doors, but how many were home, versus when you have a digital platform in front of you, which we all have smartphones, then you're like literally reaching them, you know, in their hand, right? And so what is the likelihood of catching someone at a door versus digitally, when they're utilizing their phone, when they're looking at, you know, searching for their restaurant, or, you know, watching their favorite, you know, movie or series, right? And so you bring up a point around really how social media has kind of, our digital media or ads has really, you know, played a difference as well. I mean, I'd like to know more on the statistics that are out there and kind of the analysis on that. But I do, you know, I did hear, you know, how much investment on that outside consultant that they utilize as far as the, you know, the Republican Party, right? And so, do we need to move away from the conventional? I mean, the conventional is what we know. And I mean, I do feel the person-to-person touch is important. But if you don't make that contact, then the next thing is the digital, in my perspective.
Yes, I think Jeff, you have to continue the conventional, the door-to-door, the human outreach, as well as move into the non-conventional, the Joe Rogan world, all that. Now that apparently Rogan has seen the light on some issues post-mortem, he's, you know, rethought, I think, some things. So it would have been great if Kamala would have gone on that kind of situation. There's peril and danger involved in associating with those types. But on the other hand, it could, to Mayor Manalo's point, have proved beneficial. And I think you have to do everything all the time. And we're seeing now some new information come in that may provide further information, further evidence. But I don't like to get into an apologetic mode for the Democratic Party either, because I think that plays into the master plan where we do a circular firing squad. So, you know, the pitting by the exit polls of black women against white women, and say, and the Latino community, all that blame game, I think is to be avoided on behalf of the of people that are resisting the incoming, well, let's call it a regime.
Well, that begs another question. We've been exit polling for the last several election cycles and looking at how black men versus black women versus Latinos, Latinas, how every different group, whether it's college students or whomever, are voting as if there's one mindset to any of these groups. Has one lesson of this election been that we need to stop the politics of identity and start moving on to reaching out to people as individuals?
Mayor?
Yeah, well, you know, I you know, on the local level, you know, I grew up here in Daly City, and it's been extremely diverse, and I am a Filipino-American woman in this leadership role, but I serve my whole community, you know? I serve the beautiful community I was raised in, and which serves everyone, right? And so when you talk about, you know, do we have to move away from, I think that it's always at the core of what are the issues that our community members are really, really needing, right? Like, I come from a local level where it's so important to hear firsthand from community members. And I'm given a gift to be able to serve in this capacity, but it's through that, like, what is the pulse of the community and what are they feeling and what are their needs? And so I think that's really important. You know, I'm coming from a local level, but I think that that's always a key around the messaging. And what is the American people feeling? You know, what do they need, and where are they at this time? And that's what I think is so important for us to continuously reach for. Right. And then obviously it's, you know, you're talking about different groups, you know, as far as, you know, reproductive rights and as women. I mean, I think we touched on that last, you know, at the last show, that how important that is, and that that would be really something that I think women would stand for. Right. But, you know, we're going to continue to fight, as I mentioned, you know, fight for our rights and fight for the rights of, you know, our daughters.
Thank you, Mayor. And Jeff, to just add on to that, I'm in agreement that all politics is local. And the mayor's point about Daly City standing up regarding the issue of loneliness, that was, you know, came from the county. I think it was President-elect Supervisor Canepa was sensitive to that issue and very insightful and forward-thinking coming out of the pandemic and recognizing the issue. So that was then brought to the local level, Daly City. And Daly City continues to shine as an interesting part of our county community that doesn't get a lot of recognition. I went to some local events they've been throwing, and the feel of the town is impressive. So I want to just give that congratulations to the mayor.
And for my own
observation, and I appreciate you coming to you know, our city here. I appreciate that. Yeah, we don't usually get any light over here. it's not because of the fog, but you know, we're we don't get that recognition, but it's really, I tell people it's a hidden gem. If you don't know where Daly City is, or if you move here, it's a hidden gem, right? Like, we're literally close to the metropolitan. We're on the way to Silicon Valley. We have a coastside, and we have really the diversity that really enriches our community and really the economics around with our restaurants and our retail and our food. So if you haven't come on by to our city, please come and eat at some of our amazing restaurants. Short plug there, but thank you.
One thing that's always struck me about Daly City, and I don't live in Daly City, but one thing that's always struck me over many years, I spent quite a bit of time there, and there seems to be quite a strong sense of community that you don't see so much in today's world. We grew up in a time when I was growing up, you knew who your neighbors were. And I'm not so old that that should have changed that fast. But first with television and choosing your neighbors as the people that are showing for this hour on NBC or ABC, whatever it was, as opposed to the people that live behind you. And then comes the internet, and pretty soon people are losing that sense of community. But in Daly City, it seems strong, which is really unusual. You're right next door to San Francisco, or right in the middle of a metropolitan area, and yet that sense of community within that city still stays strong.
And Jeff, maybe we should lead into some conversation about San Francisco and the political goings on there that have occurred with our new mayor and so on.
Well, that's actually something that I would like to. It's on my agenda in the next half hour. We're getting close to the end of the half hour. And I did want to shift emphasis a bit away from the national, talk more about the region of the Bay Area. We have a change in San Francisco, another community where people set aside the existing leadership in favor of somebody new with, I would say, a different vision. I'm not sure if it's really going to be a different vision, just a different perspective on how to accomplish it, coming in from outside, whether that really shows that the people were disenfranchised or upset with the existing leadership, or whether it's just a new approach and somebody new to try out.
Or maybe it's just ranked choice voting.
You've heard my thoughts on ranked choice voting. I believe it is an instrument of the devil. I tend to believe that you sort out the first place votes, and if a runoff is needed, so be it. But the idea of trusting people with ranked choice and thinking that that's an answer, yes, it saves money. I'm not a big believer. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
And you are listening to Your Legal Rights on 91.7 FM KALW, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we're talking more about the elections, both state and local, not just federal. And I'm joined by Daly City Mayor Jocelyn Manalo and Brent Turner, the real activist. Tonight, we are not taking your calls and answering your questions. Unfortunately, due to a technical difficulty, we will not be taking your calls. We value your input. We just can't get to it tonight. One thing that did strike me is the regional and statewide disenfranchise with some of our elected officials. We had so in the elections in the East Bay. We also had the very visible district attorney's race in Los Angeles County, the largest county in the nation, in which the voters voted against District Attorney George Gascon. Similar to our own elections here, where we saw what we did in the East Bay, and also in San Francisco. Let's break that down and talk a little bit about some of those. Brent Turner, what did you see happening in San Francisco? You've been active with the elections, with election work in San Francisco for some time. How did you feel about that?
Well, Jeff, you know, there's different ways to analyze it. Again, to your previous point with Lurie coming in as the mayor, I mean, this is a fellow that we don't have much intel on. He's plays it pretty close to the vest, and he's approved by many members of the business community. So I think we don't have a choice now. We give him a chance. He may be of benefit to the city and an upgrade from the previous administration. We have to wait and see. There was a bit of a shift to the right, to the moderates, away from folks like Peskin and others. But that being said, there were issues in that camp as well. So it might be a good time for fresh air in the city. And certainly the persistent issues that have been plaguing the city need addressing. So I have hope for the city. I think it's going to be on the mend. But, you know, I may be naive, but I try to stay hopeful. And the city is feeling like it's responding well to the choices. Myself, I prefer a little less right and a little more left. But I'm willing to give the incomers a chance to see if we can all rally together and do what's best for the city.
You know, but we're talking about San Francisco. Right to San Francisco is still pretty left for the rest of the country.
Yes, I think it's more of a matter of corruption, and we want to weed out the corrupt and get people involved that are for the people rather than themselves.
One rare thing about the election in San Francisco itself, none of the candidates really spent a lot of money, of time, of effort to talk about how they would address the problems. They all seem to say, we're short of housing. We'll just build more housing. We have people on the streets. We need to get them off the streets. All we have to do is get people off the streets and into housing. The drugs and other problems. Nobody talked about the steps they will take to accomplish that. And their messages were very, very similar. How do we know? How do we know what they were planning on doing?
And I think it goes back to the media, too, and their duty that may have been failed to some extent based on your comment.
No, but hard questions.
Yeah, but that being said, I still think Lurie could do good for the city. So I'm hopeful, and we're hopeful that he makes himself available to conversation with folks so he can be briefed on the inside of what's been going on in the city that he might not know. So that's the first step, is to try to engage him with good conversation, and maybe that'll be helpful.
Well, I would offer this to Mayor-elect Lurie. I would welcome you here anytime. If you want to address your citizens from right here in this station, I will make that offer again when our phone lines are open. But I would very much like you to join us, whether you could join us as a guest, whether you want to call in, any night but tonight when the phones aren't working. But I digress. One thing we didn't hear from last week's election, we didn't hear it on a national level. We didn't hear it on a local level. Has anyone been saying that this election wasn't fair.
Well, talk about a loaded question. Yes, many people have been saying that the election wasn't fair. There's been allegations, I think, emanating from the conversations between Putin, Musk, and Trump, that Starlink was possibly involved. It's almost beyond anybody's capabilities to analyze that, except for the people that create the system and Elon Musk himself. There's been allegations that, and I think with good evidence, that there was a massive amount of down ballot unusualities / anomalies, so that people voting for Trump voted blue the rest of the ballot, which isn't unheard of, but it is statistically anomalistic in certain territories. So that coupled with the comments coming out of the Trump camp that he had a little surprise for everybody, and that his constituency didn't need to vote because he had it all wrapped up anyway. These are just little points, we call them events, that occurred. You can take them for what they're worth or aggregate them. But the idea is, back to what I said earlier, when you have voting systems that are operating on Microsoft platforms and proprietary software code with poor substitutes for audits. I'm not a fan of risk limiting audit. I believe if you're going to do a recount, count all the ballots. Don't pick and choose, because that gives rise to more speculation of impropriety. So we have to be very careful where we go with our voting systems now. Unless, of course, it's too late and the democracy is lost, which some people think. But I believe in fighting forward and fighting for what our forefathers shed blood for, and Medgar Evers and the rest of our heroes from the civil rights side that have given their lives for this. So to answer your question, yes, there is speculation. There is also an issue within the election system reform community, where many of the activist groups are gamey themselves. So they're fundraising and doing things inconsistent with their duty to the public, if that's the duty they're purporting to assume. So we've run into that as well. There's a great amount of disinformation agents in the community. So it's very hard to get a grasp on what the election reform community is actually thinking. But we do know that it's possible that the election could be affected to perpetrate a crime on the American people. But it's very difficult to prove, because the systems are devised to avoid oversight or inspection. So when you've got that as your foundation, as your playing field, it makes it look like anybody that wants to investigate an election that has wide margins like this one is foolish. So that's problematic, because as you notice, there's been no outrage from the right to do a recount on this one. When they win, they gratefully accept the systems, just like the Democrats did in 2020, which we warned was a mistake. Because when you align yourself with the voting system companies that the technologists all agree are outdated, you're choosing a bad position. Also, we want to note that the CrowdStrike patch update was an unusual event that veritably changed the innards of all the computers across the country and in the world, but also gobbled up some of the systems that were relevant to the election. So that CrowdStrike moment, and the fact that their stock didn't drop at all, that is another event that has been noted by some very, very smart people that know technology. Maybe they can't assemble the army that Elon Musk can, but they are capable of analysis. And so to answer your question, and not to drone on, pun intended, we are taking a look. And nobody's crying foul because nobody wants to get in that situation of inability to defend by providing the relevant information. But there are issues, and there will be issues on every election. That's why we have to have open source voting systems, obviously, get corporate affectation out of the chain of custody, and you know that issue, so thank you. Oh, by the way, ranked choice voting in San Francisco, that's another layer of bogus behavior on top of what I just mentioned. So anybody inquiring into the results of that will soon meet the brick wall, the black boxes.
It will leave us with more questions than answers. There's no question about that.
That's right.
And then you've also had neighboring communities such as Alameda County, where they've actually declared results and then realized they misapplied ranked choice and started over and found that they had called the election for the wrong person.
That's correct.
To shift gears a little bit. Last week, Dean Johnson asked whether the fact that Kamala has not solved all of America's problems in the last 4 years, whether that was really fair, given that she was the vice president, not the president. She didn't really choose the policies or the like. And no presidents can really solve these things before they take office. I'd like to apply that same question locally. Is it fair to throw out a district attorney such as Pamela Price and to blame her for the rise in crime and say it's because of her policies when the largest city in the county and the source of much of the crime in Alameda County, the city of Oakland, has a police department that has a rate of solving violent crimes in the single digits and property crimes even less? Is it fair to blame the DA for that?
If she's a black woman, I think you can.
I think what you're saying is that that seems to be the view of an awful lot of the voting population. I don't think you're saying that of your own views.
No, obviously not. No, what I'm saying is, hearkening back to our previous conversation where Mayor Manalo was involved as well, that, you know, there seems to be a predisposition of misogyny pervasive and political calculations. I don't know. It just looks to me like a lot of the people being disrupted and replaced just happen to be women of color. Maybe that's just me, but.
Last night's opening monologue raised the issue when a comedian actually stood up on national television and commented that, let's face it, folks, women are 0-2 against Donald Trump. What does that tell us about whether we're ready? And he was trying to be funny, but it goes to what you just said. I think there is a certain amount of misogyny in elections.
To say the least, that our country is predisposed to, I don't know, can we say hate women?
I mean, you know, it's actually really disheartening, right? Like when national elections happen, I think a lot of us women, you know, we felt it in our bodies. We felt it as far as the emotional distress, honestly, because, you know, we were hoping to see a woman qualified to be president of the United States. And so when we see this nationally, you know, other countries have already elected women presidents, right? Mexico just elected a woman president. And, you know, other nations have. You know, I I'm an optimist and I'm hopeful that, you know, I don't even want to say in my daughter's lifetime. I'd like to hopefully see it in my lifetime sooner than later. That we are able to really move towards, you know, true equity in leadership, right? And so it was hard. I felt it in my body. I mean, I had won locally and I was very grateful. The numbers were really great. And it just, for me, my community trusts me and my leadership. And so I was really grateful. But also that same day, I felt it in my body where I felt this fatigue I never had before. I said, what is this? Is it because of me running so hard in an election? Or is it because, you know, I really had hoped to see the first woman president, right? And with everything that has happened around, you know, our reproductive rights being stripped and all of that, it really hits a chord, right? Like it hits the core, and you know, you're looking at, okay, where are we as a nation? And so I just hope that we keep pushing towards really having, you know, the gender pay gap is still not there, right? Like, I mean, the gap is still there. I mean, there's so many pieces of it. And obviously, we're going to continue to keep pushing forward in that realm, whether it's locally, you know, or on the state level, and hopefully on the federal level, one day we will have, you know, what does Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, you know, when she said, well, when is there true equity? Well, when there's like 5 justices that are women. Right? Because for so long, you know, it's been men, right? So
let me tell you one thing.
That's my perspective. You know, that's me as, you know, as a woman leader and having a daughter of my own that is 3 years old, and that I want to see a world more equitable for her.
I will tell you this much. One thing that distinguishes you and the reason you've been successful, notwithstanding what I think is an unreasonable pushback against women, but one of the reasons that you've not gotten caught up in that is because of something in your attitude that you haven't said these words to me, but I've clearly seen in watching you over the years, is that you don't put yourself there to rule, but rather to serve. And when you have a community like Daly City, where even though the community is quite diverse, there's a strong sense of community, and they can get behind somebody who is there to be of service and to help. Very different than someplace like San Francisco, which is far less cohesive. You have to have someone in charge who's fairly decisive. And I think there are still a pretty significant number of voters that don't like to see a decisive woman, because they see that as being ruled by, and people just aren't ready, at least not in 2024. They have been in the past, but not right now.
Yeah, I mean, if we are talking about this, I think that there's always going to be, and I don't, you know, there's always going to be more, it's going to be a lot more harder for women because we've been pushing for so long. And I think that there's always going to be the double standards that are put through media, that are put through just now social media. I mean, so many layers that if we really were to take this conversation and dissect it on different levels, those institutions have always been able to portray women in a way. And that, what is the leadership style? And if you're too strong, then you're considered, I won't say the word, you know, the B word, right? And if you're too, you know, or if, for instance, I'm an Asian woman, you know, there's a perception and stereotypes that have been what we have to actually fight against continuously, you know, as women of color. And so that is truly a reality that many women face and women of color face. But I, you know, for me, as I'm grateful for you recognizing I do serve my community where I care about it. And that's where I do, you know, I don't want to stop. I want to be able to help the community I was raised in. And I'm not always going to lead in that way, to serve with compassion and also look at ways to make our community here better, but with the people, right? With the people and hearing from the people and how we can work as a collective. So.
Brent, you were starting to voice in as well.
No, I align myself with the mayor's thoughts, and I'm just, again, as the propagandists continue to attempt to pit us against each other, I just want to be mindful, to stay mindful that the information that we may rely on is at issue.
And I think I wanted to add, and you know, very just around what's happening on a national level, you know, we had our governor and also our Attorney General Rob Bonta, you know, speak out right away around, you know, being there for California, and really around some of, you know, some of the real fear that's happening. So, you know, as far as being able to protect the rights of our community members, whether it's LGBTQ plus our immigrant community, I think, you know, there are so many layers around what people are feeling, and that we really need to really community build. And that exactly as what Brent is saying, like, instead of us getting pit against one another, it's really a time where all of us as a community can come together, you know, from our diverse communities perspectives, and really be able to unite. And we've seen that through solidarity movements across time and time again, where it's when we are able to unite with one another that we're able to really, you know, push for change.
It's often been said, and I'd like your thoughts on this one, Brent, that to see a real breakthrough, whether it's the first woman in a major office or things of that nature, it comes more easily from the Republican side. Because if you can get the conservatives behind you, others will follow suit. So the first Supreme Court justice, first female Supreme Court justice, was Sandra Day O'Connor, who was a Reagan appointee. It took the Republicans, Richard Nixon, to actually travel to China and begin a market there. These types of reforms that Democrats have always been in favor of really only can occur when people from across the aisle are not only supportive of it, but perhaps advancing it. Do you see it the same way?
Yes, I do, to a degree, but also in the schism and the chaos of the new environment that we anticipate, I believe it's a different situation. Whereas before, there was some reasonableness in uniting both sides of the aisle, or the attempt, I think now we're going to run into some heavier problems. We might get some relief due to the audacity of the appointments, the projected appointments that Trump's come out of the gate with. I mean,
gate being an appropriate word to end that with, the idea of
gates out of the gates with. But you know, people that shoot their own dogs, people that are accused of having sex with minors. These are the dregs of our society, and it's just an embarrassing conversation. On that note, I did want to apologize to our listening audience and to the mayor and to our deep bench of great female leaders in the Democratic Party, Christine Pelosi. I'm thinking of Fiona Ma. We have Betty Yee locally serving with the mayor. We have Teresa Pirano. We have up in Vacaville, a woman elected to the board there that's great, Bridgette Hunley, and a lot of San Mateo County female supervisor leaders. And then, of course, the old guard going out who hopefully download their knowledge, Jackie Spear and Anna Eshoo, and I don't know what Zoe Lofgren, she's great, is thinking right now, but I'm trying to get into conversation. I want to apologize to all the females because this is just the worst. I mean, how embarrassing for our country that we could have turned the corner with a very well thought, qualified female leader. And for whatever happened, we didn't go that direction. We apparently enlist a buffoon to lead our country. The international ramifications, it's all just so horrifying. So I have to, as a male, just apologize because I think we bear a lot of the blame, and we're just hopeful that females can come on strong and lead us to a better place.
There are many, many, many reasons for the election outcome to go the way it was, whether it's because the captain of the ship changed far too late in the electoral process, whether it's because of gender, whether it's because Vice President Harris took the helm and tried to run with it at a time when it was the only legitimacy she could have would be to step up as the continuation of the same administration and yet had to distance herself from policies. That's an impossible walk. Well, I think we can talk for quite a while, but we've actually run out of time tonight. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, as last week, we looked a little closure on the recent election, yet to be determined if we really have achieved any. Our guest tonight, once again, Daly City Mayor Jesslyn Manalo, and thank you again, Madam Mayor, for joining us, and Brent Turner, the Real Activist. In coming weeks, we are working with your year-end tax cuts, with the California attorneys for the California Lawyers for the Arts, who have started a reentry program to train people from prison. We have some great programs, and as always, we take your calls and answer your questions. Once again, thank you all for listening, and thank you to my guests. And at the controls, Joanne Marr, and a thanks to all of you for joining us. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.